Go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Work is underway for the Orion, NASA's next-generation spaceship, which is expected to carry crews to the International Space Station in 8 years and to the moon no later than 2020. The lead contractor is Lockheed Martin. The Commerce Department says economic growth in the second quarter of this year was 2.6%, slower than previously thought, and evidence analysts say that the economy is slowing down. 10 people involved in the Hewlett-Packard boardroom leak investigation invoked their Fifth Amendment rights today and refused to answer questions from a House subcommittee, among them HP's general counsel, Ann Baskins, who resigned just before the hearing began. Former board chair Patricia Dunn did testify, telling the panel that she regretted the way the leak investigation was handled and was not aware that some of the tactics may have been illegal. Officials at Ford Motors European Division say they expect to post a profit this year for the third year in a row. They also say they have no plans to sell any of their European premium car brands except for Aston Martin. And General Electric says that Kazakhstan will buy 310 of its diesel locomotives, which GE describes as being environmentally clean. The deal is worth $650 million. Gold is trading at $610.30 an ounce at this hour. Silver is at $11.71. Light sweet crude oil up 69 cents a barrel, trading at $63.65. All the markets are down on Wall Street. The Dow is lower by 10 points at 11,679. NASDAQ is down 5 at 2258, and the S&P 500 is down 1 at 1335. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walters. Now 5 past the hour.
And now from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Does America's moral standing help it to win wars? Or is it just in the way? Does our war in Iraq and our mainstream, our mistreatment of prisoners make us more safe or less? It's an important question because some would argue that America, as I would, that America's moral standing has value just because we're Americans and we should believe that we should be a good society. But even if you look at it just pragmatically, if you look at just the question of whether our humanity helps us win wars or harms us in winning wars, I think the new National Intelligence Estimate that just came out talking about Iraq, and also the bill that just passed by the House that allows us to mistreat detainees, I think shows that actually our moral standing does matter in the war on terrorism. But I know there are those that disagree, or at least disagree partly, and one of them may be my friend Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist. Mike Lane, welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Well, now, let me start with the broad question, and then I definitely want to get into the details. Let me just ask you, do you think that America's moral standing, that our humanity, helps us in the world, in winning wars?
Well, I don't think the moral standing helps in winning wars. I think military power helps in winning wars. However, I will grant you that a higher moral standing in the world certainly goes a long way towards persuading allies to be our allies and perhaps undercutting the support that that various rogue regimes might get that they otherwise wouldn't get if it wasn't a nation of high moral standing that they were fighting.
Well, let me ask you, because I think it moves on very easily. It's a nice segue to, of course, the National Intelligence Estimate, or at least that portion of it that was just released.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Intelligence Estimate says that because of our actions in Iraq, that the enemy is growing, that it's becoming more diffuse, more independent. It's not even needing al-Qaeda anymore, although al-Qaeda is the terrorist group, the single most terrorist group that is most harmful to us, that it's all about al-Qaeda anymore. Because of our actions in Iraq, more and more Muslims are joining jihad. It's still a very small percentage of Muslims, but they're growing largely because Iraq is becoming a cause célèbre throughout the Muslim world. And because of our actions there, attacking a country that never attacked us, and because of some of the things that they know that are going on in places like Guantanamo Bay, we're actually losing the war on terror. How do you respond to that?
Well, the National Intelligence Estimate that was released, the four-page judgment summary, says a lot of things, but I don't think it says that al-Qaeda is becoming less relevant. It does, however, say, I think you characterized it correctly, that there is a tendency on the part of militants and radicals to join the jihad against the United States or against the West in general as a result of the continuing war in Iraq. And that's not surprising to me because, as we have discussed before, as others have pointed out, there is a tendency for most people to want to be free and not to be occupied. And the longer that United States forces stay there, of course, the more attractive a resistance becomes to people who really have nothing else to do. But the report says a lot more things beyond that, so I don't think it's all that one-sided.
Well, indeed, a recent poll taken of Iraqis shows that more than 70% want us to leave. Want us to leave within a year. In fact, overwhelming majorities, except for the Kurdish areas, wanted us out. Frankly, if the Kurds wanted us to stay and declare an independent state, I'm all okay with that. But in the rest of Iraq, if you exclude the Kurdish areas, the areas are sometimes 80 or 90% want us gone. And I think you have to ask yourself, if we're fighting for democracy in Iraq, why is it we won't leave when most of the people there don't want us there?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think I have the answer to it. Perhaps some of our listeners will take objection to what I say. But it's not, you know, Iraq is a fledgling democracy, but they don't run by plebiscite, and they don't run by public opinion poll. They run by their duly elected government, and the representatives of their duly elected government are the ones who see a bigger picture, have perhaps more knowledge of the situation that's going on, and perhaps can give a more reliable opinion as to what Iraq's needs are. And the government at this point has the opinion that they would like us to stay and help them continue in establishing safety, security, and stability in the new fledgling democracy.
Of course, we helped set up that government. We chose the Constitution for it. We designed it, how it would be done. Is it your position, Mike, that the American government would have allowed to take office in Iraq, an Iraqi government that ordered us to leave?
Well, it almost did. Remember, at one point, they did elect a leader of the parliament, or not of the parliament, excuse me, he's already there, but they did elect a leader of the unity government that was not going to be pro-Western or pro-United States. He was looking to set up a very harsh Islamic regime and something that was not at all in our interests, as I or you would articulate them, I think. And he had, you know, some 30 days or 60 days to set up a coalition government, and at the end of 6 months, when he failed,
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the president of the United States. How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free? I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm debating the issues of the day with Mike Lane, Republican strategist. The two main things we want to talk about this hour are the recently released national intelligence estimate talking about what's going on in Iraq and how it's helping fuel terrorism. And then I want to move on a little bit later into the detainee bill, some call it the torture bill, that has passed the House and is up already before the Senate. First, I want to talk about the national intelligence estimate and make sure you know what indeed it says. And I don't think Mike will dispute this. I'm simply reading from the estimate. They say the most powerful terrorist group is still al-Qaeda, but it's the most powerful single terrorist group. In fact, actually, terrorism is growing worldwide, and a lot of it isn't caused by al-Qaeda. It's mostly caused by Muslim jihadists. And what's interesting is, though, it does say it's still important to capture Osama bin Laden and the other leaders of al-Qaeda. The report says if he were killed, likely the group would splinter into a bunch of smaller groups that would fight each other and spend more time fighting each other than would fight us. But overall, the jihadist movement is growing, and it's growing because it's taking action against a Muslim country, one that didn't attack us, and that also entrenched grievances, the corruption of a lot of autocrats in the Islamic world, and fear of Western domination, meaning that we're going to control their countries, leads to anger, humiliation, a sense of powerlessness. There's a slow pace of real and sustained economic, social, and political reforms in many Muslim-majority nations, pervasive anti-United States sentiment. But what's interesting is it also gives us a way out, this National Intelligence Estimate, which is the considered judgment of 16 intelligence agencies in the United States. It gives us a way out. It says there are some Muslim clerics that are condemning violence and extremist religious interpretations. They are condemning autocratic governments. They believe in peaceful political activism. And it notes that the greatest vulnerability of the jihadists, their Achilles heel, if you will, is what they want for their own people. Because they want this ultra-conservative ideology, much like the Taliban had in Afghanistan, mistreating women, taking away people's freedoms, that if they get what they want, or if people understand what they want, then most Muslims, the great majority of Muslims, turn against them. Actually, if people knew what the terrorists want, and even if they're allowed to impose what they want, that perhaps could lead to the greatest, in fact, movement against them. So with all that in mind, Mike, I want to ask you this. When the Taliban attacked, when al-Qaeda attacked with support of the Taliban and murdered 3,000 Americans, I see that very much like a spark, that there was all this gasoline, if you will, lying on the ground, anti-American resentment, and also resentment against the autocracies, corrupt and abusive that they are, throughout the Arab world, including Saddam Hussein, but also including our allies like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Syria and a bunch of others. I see 9/11 as that spark. And after 9/11, it seems to me we should have gone after the spark, only gone after the Taliban in Afghanistan. Instead, we went after all the gasoline and ended up lighting it aflame. Now, you may not like my metaphor, but do you think in hindsight we should have concentrated our attention on Afghanistan rather than Iraq?
Well, you're right. I don't like your metaphor, but let me say that, you know, right after 9/11, I mean, the day after, before we had gone into Iraq, before we had gone after the Taliban in Afghanistan, there were massive demonstrations on the Arab street in many countries, where people who had not been part of a jihadist movement or something like that were cheering Al-Qaeda for their ability to bring down the World Trade Center and to slaughter 3,000 Americans in one act. So, you know, these people have had deep-seated problems and hatred of America long before Iraq, and I don't think that's the sole cause. The second thing I'd say, Mark,
the estimate says it's increasing the cause.
Right,
I admit
right.
The gasoline was
and,
there,
and the NIE does say that. And you fairly summarized the NIE. I don't think there was anything there that I could take exception to the way you reported it or paraphrased it. You did, however, leave one point of it out. And I will quote you one sentence from the Washington Post editorial page this morning, not an editorial page that I am given to quoting very often, but the Washington Post says, quote, the report supports Mr. Bush's contention that Iraq is now a central front in the war on terrorism. It says, quote, perceived jihadist success there would inspire more fighters to continue the struggle elsewhere, unquote, while defeat would mean that, quote, fewer fighters would be inspired to carry on the fight, unquote. In other words, what the report is saying is that at this point, if we leave Iraq to the jihadists, it will inspire them to have even more and better recruiting successes, whereas if we stay there, get the job done, and turn over effective safety and security to the Iraqi government, that will inspire the jihadists not to join the cause and to say, okay, it's not working.
Sounds to me like we can't win for losing. I can propose to you one of my favorite solutions, which you've heard before and which I venture to say I haven't heard a single Democrat or Republican support, but I'm waiting for people to take my grand idea. How about if we declare an independent Kurdish state, something I've always loved the idea of. They're very pro-American. They have oil. They believe in democracy. They're not attacking our troops. And show that indeed you can have a democratic state in the region that listens to its people, that the Kurds would decide whether or not we should be there or not, but it would be a true responsive government, and that would be a way to teach by example. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I don't think that you're actually all alone in that, with the exception that you haven't articulated what you would do with the remaining Sunni and Shia areas of that. You essentially are agreeing with Senator Joe Biden of Delaware, who has come to the conclusion.
Yeah, Joe Biden has said some of those things. That's true.
Yeah,
here's how I deal with the Shiites and the Sunnis. The way I see it is you let them vote on whether we should stay or we shouldn't stay. The Kurds vote we should. The Sunnis and the Shiite province, any province that votes we should stay, we stay. Any province that votes we leave, we leave. We show the world that, in fact, our goal is not domination. Our goal is not permanent military bases. Our goal is not taking their oil, but simply to help people who want to be helped. And to those that don't want to be helped in a fair election, we say, goodbye, you're on your own, you voted us out, good luck. And I think then maybe people would see what is the better option. And no one could argue with that because it's democratic.
Well, except for the downside risk of abandoning certain areas to the jihadists would result in a safe haven, if you will. What the Taliban used to provide for al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, it would result in a safe haven in Iraq for the jihadists and the terrorists to mass and to plot and strategize and to carry on their war against the West. And
I would
reason,
do what Israel does.
Mark,
if you catch anybody doing it, you bomb them. In other words, you don't occupy the land, but if you find someone who has truly killed Americans, who has murdered Americans, you either capture them or kill them. But you don't occupy the whole country. I want to get, though, I know you want to go on with me, but I want to go on with someone who's been holding a bit of a long time.
Please.
Dave from California. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Gentlemen, a question that's relevant for today. Do either of you believe that torture leads to dependable, truthful, reliable evidence? And if neither of you do. I have an expanded question.
That's a great question, Dave, and it leads on to what's going to be the next half-hour discussion, which is the torture bill that's up right now before the Senate. I don't think it does, Dave. I think if it does, it's got to be in extremely rare cases. My understanding is generally people who are being tortured say anything to stop the torture, and you get a lot more good stuff with trickery and sometimes even kind treatment, as we learned from the Nazis after World War II. We treated them kindly, and they deserted in droves. Mike, you have a different opinion?
I hate to sound like President Clinton, but I think it depends on what we mean by torture, Dave, and I mean that sincerely. We've had a great debate over the last year or two as to exactly what torture is and is not, and I think we're on the way towards settling it if the Senate resolves their vote on the detainee bill sometime tonight. But then the direct answer to your question is, there are some cases where torture has proven to be an extraordinarily effective measure of interrogation, and there are other instances
that Mark
brought up
that,
where
I haven't
it
heard
simply
it.
Gives you information that somebody will give you just to get out of the torturous situation.
Mike, give us an example where torture has worked.
I don't have a specific one because I've never tortured anybody.
But the United States has.
Give us an example
where in history it's worked.
Well,
any
I don't
country,
know that the United States ever has tortured anyone.
We've
been signatories and I think observant of the Geneva Conventions since the 1940s or
Mike,
the early 50s.
You just said that torture sometimes worked.
Well,
I think there are
examples in, and I can't cite a specific one, but there are examples in countries that do carry on torture where they are able to extract information from detainees or suspects or whatever you want to call them that has proved to be relevant.
Can you give what name? What
you know, it's reported that most of the countries in the theater we're talking about, the Middle East, routinely use torture as a method of interrogation.
And do you think the United States should join that level? Because here we have the NIE report that precisely says precisely because of the corruption and torture and autocracy of these Middle Eastern regimes. And again, Saddam Hussein certainly, but also our allies like Egypt and Saudi Arabia, precisely because those governments are torturing people, the people are so angry they're joining these jihads. Do you really want us to emulate those countries?
No. In fact, I'm firmly on record against torture. And that gets me back to my first answer to Dave's question, which is, Dave, it depends on what you mean by torture. I suspect in the second half an hour we'll have a discussion as to what the parameters of torture are, whether this technique or that technique qualifies as torture or not. But on those things we can agree on, I think we'll all be against it.
I'd like to throw
I definitely want to continue that discussion after the break, but let's give Dave one last chance to speak. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, I'd like to have you consider this. Questioning in which they say, tell us that Iran is a major threat to the world right now, and we'll take the settling torture away from you. Might they be wanting, not the truth, might they be wanting to get something they can once again present to the United Nations and Congress and say, well, you guys all saw the same evidence we did. That's what I see happening.
Dave, thank you for your call. I think Dave's point is that, that maybe some of our intelligence estimates, some of our faulty ones, may be coming from torture, and then we will go in a whole war where we don't know what we're doing.
We certainly need more guidelines on this, and as we discussed, the House passed the legislation yesterday. The Senate is debating it on the Senate floor as we speak. They've already rejected the Leahy Specter amendment by 3 votes. They have more to discuss, and we'll see what comes out of it.
I want to talk in detail about that legislation after the break. Folks, if you've got a view on this, if you support or don't support the torture bill, that's my words, but I think that's exactly what it would allow. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I want to hear from you, and we'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Bruce Burt's radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir. It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Burch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484. Did you receive an email?
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I have a quote here from Denny Hoyer. He's the Democratic whip, the number two in charge of the Democratic Party. He says, quote, defending America requires us to marshal the full range of our power, diplomatic and military, economic and moral. And when our moral standing is eroded, our international credibility is diminished as well. Another quote, this is from Republican Senator John Warner, who said a few months ago, that there are three things that must attest, that any test for a bill dealing with detainees must follow. That the United States can be proud of it, that the world will see it as fair and humane, and that the Supreme Court can uphold it. So my question to my guest, Mike Lane, Republican strategist, is the bill, the torture bill, just approved by the House, a bill that says, in effect, that whatever the CIA did before 2005 is okay, even if it's a grave violation, a grave breach of the Geneva Convention, no one can be prosecuted for it. A bill that allows non-citizens indefinite detention forever. A bill that would say that habeas corpus, which is protected in the Constitution, that wouldn't apply to these people. Whether this bill passes the test of Senator Warner, a bill America can be proud of, that the world will see as fair and humane, and the Supreme Court can uphold.
Well, Mark, I think we're going to find out in about 5 or 6 hours that it passes Senator Warner's test, as he's going to vote yes on it.
Well, so, he will, but But it's not just a question of his view, but how the United States, the world, and the Supreme Court sees it.
Well, and interesting, you should bring up Congressman Hoyer, a gentleman who I have a lot of admiration for, actually, and know because he's a local congressman here in D.C. representing suburban Maryland. But he seems to have changed his tune since Majority Leader Pelosi has announced that she's trying to dump him as leader or as whip and install John Murtha as her hand-picked lieutenant instead of him. He was a guy who probably, before that challenge was announced by Murtha, probably would have been one of the 34 Democrats who voted yes on the bill rather than voting no against it. We'll never know that.
You're bringing in a lot of intra-partisan concerns, but the heart of it, I think, is this question. I mean, let's deal with one of them. The issue of the CIA agents. The idea is now they can't do grave breaches of the convention. All right.
Right.
They can still do breaches that the president's going to define. They can still break this treaty that's been around for 60 years since World War II that all civilized nations follow. But the grave breaches that they committed over the last 5 years, it's a pass. It's kind of like you get three murders free rule. All right, you beat up, you tortured a prisoner, you waterboarded him, you put bamboo shoots under his fingernails, you're home free, but don't do it anymore. Is that something the world can be proud of, that America can be proud of?
As you know, Mark, waterboarding is one of those areas that has been gray that the Congress is about to clarify, and it's going to define it as a legal interrogation technique, with one of the aggressive interrogation techniques that are going to be approved. Bamboo shoots under the fingernails are probably not going to be approved. That's one of those things that I'm sure you, me, and Dave from California could all agree it comes under anybody's definition of torture. So the real question at this point is, does the bill that was passed by the House with 34 Democratic votes, I haven't done the correlation yet, but I suspect that those 34 Democrats probably all reside in districts that could be, considered less than 55% Democratic, and so therefore
they tend to be in the South. I've looked them up. They tend to be in the South.
So they're on the side of protecting the interests of Republicans. You know, this is a big bill. For our listeners' background, it all started in June when the Supreme Court told the president that, yes, he could have his military tribunals, but no, he couldn't set the rules by himself. He needed to have the Congress work with him and establish the parameters and the rules for these military tribunals. Well, so the president.
Right, that's a decision that I supported, that I recall you didn't, right?
No, I thought the Supreme Court got that one wrong, but I'm willing to defer to my history books and say that they've got more power than I do and go along with them, even though I think they were dead wrong.
Okay, well, I think they were right, and I wanted to give some more details, because you talk about specific torture techniques. John McCain, when he passed his bill, his anti-torture bill, he thought, and he said on the record that he thought it would stop practices like waterboarding, simulated drowning, prolonged sleep deprivation, induced hypothermia, where you put someone out in the cold so long that they become deathly ill because of it. He thought it would stop all that, but then George Bush, after threatening to veto the bill, decided, you know what I'll do? I'll sign it, and then I'll do a nice little signing statement that says, I won't apply it, that even though I signed it into law, I won't follow the law. So John McCain was trying to make this bill airtight, and apparently he's failed on that too, but I guess he's running for president in 2008, and so he managed to accept it.
Well,
What's going on with McCain?
You know, not only is Senator Warner going to vote for the bill, but Senator McCain's going to vote for it, and Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina is going to vote for it. It does a lot of good things. Let me go back to your first question on this, Mark, which I've avoided so far, not intentionally, but I didn't address it, and that is the waiver of any CIA interrogator action prior to 2005, which is the statute of limitations for things that they might have done. We were in a situation where most people agree that those gray areas had not been defined, that we were talking about interrogation techniques, that you could make an argument on either side as to what they are. And the president was insistent, and I think he was right in insisting, that any CIA interrogators were not going to be prosecutable or wind up in court as a result of lawsuits filed by enemy combatants who are terrorists who are challenging the techniques that they use to interrogate these people. I think that's right. There's no reason why our good, hardworking, honest CIA agents ought to be going to jail or even to court to defend themselves because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed doesn't like the fact that he was waterboarded.
And what about our dishonest CIA agents that took joy in torturing people? What about the people in Abu Ghraib, for example, who I guess would be protected by this, that like to put people in human pyramids, attach electrodes to genitalia? Shouldn't we let a jury decide? Let the if the American jury thinks that, hey, this was an awful terrorist and this CIA agent was just doing their job, I'm fully confident that our system of democracy will protect the CIA agent. But if, on the other hand, the jury finds that this was an innocent person like Maher Arar, who we shipped off to Syria to be tortured, and in fact that the CIA agent doing it was some sadistic jerk like the people at Abu Ghraib, then I think that the American people will punish such an actor. Why can't we let the courts decide?
Well, you know, juries may or may not do the right thing. Mostly they generally do. But why should you put a CIA agent who was honestly and faithfully trying to do the best job that he could under the circumstances and under a particularly gray instruction manual that wasn't telling him exactly what would and wouldn't work? He was getting good information out of terrorists. Why should we even let a terrorist take him to court and force him to prove his innocence? To me, criminal law doesn't require you to prove your innocence, right?
It's you're assumed innocent until proven guilty. It's conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. And let's just take the example of electrodes on the genitalia or the stuff that we saw at Abu Ghraib. I mean, to me, is that a gray area? To me, it's not gray at all. Do you consider that what happened at Abu Ghraib to be a gray area?
Well, yeah, I do. I'm going to go with you on the example that you gave, Mark. You know, you hook up electrodes to the genitalia, and you give a guy 25,000 volts. That's torture in my mind.
Okay,
you know,
I agree.
100 volts through him, trying to scare the heck out of him. That might not be torture. If you make people get into, you know, strip down naked and get into human pyramids, to me that's harassment. That's not torture. It is personally degrading, but I don't see anything particularly wrong with that.
So you don't think that should be illegal?
I don't think that should be illegal. I see nothing wrong with trying to strip
people. With degrading people.
I don't see anything wrong with the human pyramids.
The Geneva Convention prohibits gross abuses to human dignity.
Right.
Do you think that the Geneva Conventions are wrong? That would be a wrong interpretation?
No, I think a gross abuse of human dignity would be forcing them to have sex with each other or something like that. I don't think forming a human pyramid, in my mind, is a gross abuse of human dignity. I don't even think, and you know, I'm going to stick up for the poor girl. She's going to be in jail for a long time. I'm sorry about her, but you know, of all the things that Lindy, whatever her name, did.
England. Lindy England.
You know, holding a guy on a leash, you know, stupid, inept, dumb, shouldn't have been done, but in my mind, not a violation of the Geneva Convention.
As far as I'm concerned, I do feel sorry for Lindy England, too, not because of what she did, but because, in my view, it wasn't her idea to do these things. I'm sure she was ordered from up above. And the fact that those people haven't been imprisoned while they stuck this GI in jail, to me, that's the real shame of Lindy England. Let's go to someone on the line. We've got, I think her name is Ajina. I want to pronounce your name right, Ajina. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, this is Ajina from the Jaguars.
Welcome.
I have one observation that most of these definitions of punishment have been defined in The Hague. They've been adjudicated and well-defined.
Ajina makes a good point, Mike. I mean, what he's saying is the Geneva Conventions have been around for 60 years. They've been discussed in court proceedings, not just in the United States, but throughout the world. There is a clear body of international law on the Geneva Conventions, and that maybe if we don't want to follow this international law, we should just withdraw from the Geneva Conventions and admit to the rest of the world that we're just not as civilized as they are. What do you think, Mike?
Actually, we're much more civilized than the rest of the world. You know, we give people three hot meals and a great bed to sleep in down in Guantanamo, and they take their prisoners and they take saws and they sever their heads from their bodies. So
not in Canada, not in England, not in France, not in Germany, not in Japan. I'm talking about the nations that honor the Geneva Conventions. I'm not talking about Syria, to whom we ourselves shipped an innocent guy to be tortured. I mean, they follow the Geneva Conventions. Britain is in war zone with us. Great Britain is fighting. They're dying with us. And they follow Geneva Conventions. Are they just higher moral character in England than we are?
No. In fact, we don't know what MI6 is doing, you know, over there with their prisoners. I suspect they're following the Geneva Convention as we're following the Geneva Convention. Later on today, the Senate will give final approval to a bill which will define some of these new interrogation techniques. Remember, all this body of law that we've just heard about from the recent caller, and thank you very much for bringing that into the debate, that's all from years ago, before waterboarding was even discovered or invented as an interrogation technique. So when you have something new, you need a ruling or a definition as to whether it does or does not qualify, and that's what the Senate bill is all about. It's giving direction to our interrogators so they'll know what is and is not legal under the Geneva Convention.
No, it's not. Mike Arlen Specter wanted to give a specific detailed list of exactly what's allowed and what's not allowed. And that was voted down by a clear partisan, all Republicans voting it down except for a few, and all Democrats supporting the bill. So you had all Republicans supporting torture and all Democrats and a few Republicans supporting the Specter bill. But no, the bill as it's written now, and the one that I urge everyone listening to this broadcast to call their senators and urge them not to support, doesn't specify it. It says that President Bush can define it all as long as it's not a grave breach of the Geneva Convention. So are there two standards here, the Geneva Conventions? There's the ones that England and other civilized nation applies, and then there's the United States that tries not to do any grave breaches of it.
Well, you know, there are grave breaches, and then there are less grave breaches, and then there are inadvertent breaches. I don't think we're talking about the inadvertent breaches. I think we're talking about the gray area here. Clearly, the president has never even asked for authority to have any grave breaches of the Geneva Convention. What he's been
asking
to do is define the gray area.
He was against this bill to begin with because he didn't want to be regulated in that regard.
No, he wasn't against it.
Gina, let me give you one last word here before we drop you. Go ahead, caller.
Well, I am. My opinion is that gray areas, there are none. And the idea that we make up gray areas just so that we can have a wider permission to punish people and to get information that doesn't exist really bothers me.
Thank you for your call. It bothers me as well. I think this is an out. It's an out for a president who wants to basically allow torture. And remember, he was against the McCain bill to begin with. Now what he's doing is basically allowing legislation to come in that suggests we're against torture while still giving him the freedom to do whatever torture he wants. You disagree with that, Mike?
Yeah, it does. Remember, there are grave breaches here that are absolutely prohibited. I've heard you yourself, Mark, tell me that in the case of the ticking time bomb and perhaps other cases that would be of equal urgency or importance, both you and Senator McCain would be perfectly willing to look the other way and do what needed to be done to interrogate the suspect during the ticking time bomb to see if there was any information we could get.
To be clear, I only said that's jury nullification. In other words, if somebody gets it wrong, they're going to be criminally prosecuted. They have to be dead on right. And frankly, it's not me that's looking the other way. It's a question of a jury looking the other way. If a jury feels that this was necessary, a jury won't convict. That's the way our system works. Jury nullification is part of the system. But the point is you could still be criminally charged, and I think you should be. Let me just go on to the last question because we only have a few minutes left, and that is the one of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, again, I want to bring things to a jury. I want to bring things to courts because at the end of the day, I trust our system, and I have a feeling our president just doesn't trust the American system. The Constitution says quite clearly that the writ of habeas corpus, this is Article 1, Section 9, it's one that I've read a lot on the air because I don't think a lot of people realize it. It says, quote, "The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it." The writ of habeas corpus has only been suspended once in all of American history. That was during the Civil War. I think we can all agree the Civil War was a rebellion and that Abraham Lincoln was constitutionally right to suspend the writ. But it hasn't been suspended any other time, and yet now, this Congress, this Senate, if it approves this bill, will suspend the writ of habeas corpus and basically say to any non-citizen of the United States, we can hold you in jail forever without charging you with a crime. You support this, Mike?
Well, you know, I don't think the Constitution was meant, no matter what the Supreme Court says, I don't think it was meant to apply to terrorists, jihadists, enemy combatants, non-United States citizens, et cetera. Now, they're, you know, occasionally the court makes a huge error, and I think they have in terms of affording some rights to the terrorists. Where we're going on this, Mark, is I'm fairly certain that eventually Mrs. Pelosi and a few of her friends are going to want to detain some people on the battlefield and start reading them their Miranda rights before we can take them into custody. There's got to be a limit to what we'll do for these people.
I'm asking about non-citizens. I mean, you say they're terrorists. We're talking about non-citizens. We didn't say only proven terrorists. If it were a proven terrorist, they could go to a court. They could prove they're terrorists. We could put them away. So we both agree on terrorists. I'm talking about people who are innocent, people who have done nothing wrong except for the fact that they don't happen to be a citizen of the United States. You believe they can be put in jail for life without trial.
The United States has no interest in putting someone who's not a bad guy away in jail for any amount of time, much less for life.
What if we make a mistake? Mahera Rahm, classic example. What if we think he's a terrorist, but he's not? He can prove it in court, but we don't give him that opportunity.
We're holding this person, and we've let them go. Now, we've made a mistake a couple times. There's a few Gitmo detainees that wound up back on the battlefield and wound up being retaken into custody by us. Shame on us for letting them go in the first place.
How about a better idea? Let an independent court decide whether they're innocent or guilty. I thought that was the American way.
Well, we certainly will have courts that decide if they're innocent or guilty, but they will not be able to sue us for habeas corpus. Because they just don't have that access to that constitutional right. We're giving them
that's what habeas corpus is. Let's be clear for anyone who doesn't know what habeas corpus is. All habeas corpus is, and it's an ancient right that predates America by hundreds of years, is a demand to a court to show why they're in prison. That's all habeas corpus is. It doesn't give damages. It's not war crimes. It simply says, hey, why am I in jail? Can you please explain it to me? It's a very basic human right, and it protects those who are absolutely innocent from being caught up in this thing. And you're against this?
Well, I'm against it for terrorists and jihadists and non-citizens who have not the access to the constitutional rights that our citizens have. There's no reason why if we decide, and let's take a wild hypothetical here. Let's take Osama. Let's say we catch him, and he's.
I'd try him.
We're going to try.
I'd try him. I wouldn't put him in jail for life. I would try him. I would show evidence of his crimes. I expect he would be convicted, and then I'd give him the death penalty.
All right. And what would you do if there's some sort of jury nullification for some reason? I don't know what it is, but he is found not guilty. What would you do with him then?
I'd see if we could charge him for another crime. Because that's the way our system works.
Okay, so
I trust American juries. I think American juries would convict Osama bin Laden. I'm really not worried about that.
Well,
I'm really
not worried about Osama, but I am worried about Osama's cousin. And,
well, the answer is you obviously don't trust the American system. You don't trust trial by juries. Let me read something to you that I think typifies your view here. This is a discussion of whether this is tyrannical, okay?
Uh-huh.
Someone who obstructs the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. Someone who has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. Someone for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of the states, for depriving, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting people beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. I know you know what I'm reading from, Mike. I'm reading from the Declaration of Independence and Tom Jefferson's complaints about the King of England. It sounds to me like he'd make the same complaints about King George IV, who's ruling us today.
Except for the fact that we were citizens of England at the time, and these terrorists are not citizens of the United States. Therefore, they are not, no matter what the Supreme Court says, they are not entitled to the full array of protections and rights as afforded to citizens are under the Constitution of the United States.
Mike, how do you feel if another country were to take American citizens and hold them in jail indefinitely without trial, American citizens who say we're absolutely innocent and we can prove our innocence, but they pick you or me up, we're on a vacation and I don't know where, and they pick us up, they hold us indefinitely without trial forever. And they say, you know, we say, wait a minute, we think we have human rights. They say, no, you don't have any human rights. You're not a citizen of our land. You have no rights under our land. Don't call on the Geneva Conventions because we interpret them not to apply to you. I guess the answer is we should never travel abroad, right, Mike?
Well, you know, certainly we ought to be prepared to be treated the same way as we will treat enemy combatants that are caught up in our system. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, because I'm not the lawyer you are, but it's my understanding that the Geneva Convention, when there is a serious disagreement as to how it ought to be interpreted, is specifically in the convention subject to negotiation between the governments involved and not supposed to go into the courts. And so therefore, if I'm being caught up or you're being caught up in some foreign land and in some foreign judicial system and you're not getting treated according to the way we would like it, that's a subject for our State Department to bring up with their government and see if they can negotiate a better deal for you.
Actually, my understanding, and I do need to check this because I don't quite know the answer, is the Geneva Convention is interpreted both by governments and by courts. Sarge has been holding on the line a long time. We're almost done, Sarge, so I can only give you 20 seconds. Go.
Okay. First of all, let's say something. The Geneva Convention allows habeas corpus as a universal thing. A person has to be proven guilty to show the body of evidence that indicts them. Also, as a Vietnam-era disabled veteran, I'm going to tell you, going away from this measure is intolerable. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Sarge. Two very good points. The Geneva Convention is requires habeas corpus. I did not know that. I'll double-check that. But also, as an ex-Vietnam vet, I appreciate your view, and I understand that Americans may well be tortured because of the way we treat others. Mike, you got 20 seconds. Go.
Mark, sometime in the next 6 hours, the Senate will pass this bill. It'll be good for America. It'll be good for the war on terrorism. We will know what we can and cannot do with detainees. There will be a process in place to try and convict those who do go through the system. I'm looking forward to it, and America will be a safer place because of it.
Mike, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think we need to say what we can do and we can't do, but it should be humane and consistent with American values and our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our history. Thank you for tuning into this debate. Thank you, Mike, for coming on and being my foil. I always appreciate that. And tune in tomorrow for another edition of The Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.
one minute. This is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got problems.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show.